Good evening, Ian. Welcome to the Space Show.
Good evening, Andrew.
What's ASERA?
ASERA is the Australian Space Engineering and Research Association, and that was formed in the middle of 1990 by a group of space enthusiasts. A lot of us were a bit frustrated about the lack of progress about Australia being involved in space, both from a government and an industry point of view. So a group of people formed together and decided that they would do it in their own time and with their own efforts.
And what was your first project then?
Well, initially we aimed to build a small satellite based on the North American microsat design, but with some Australian improvements. And we didn't raise enough money yet to proceed very far down that track, so in the meantime we joined up with the Melbourne people, who built and flew a small rocket, and we're building a second version of OSROC 1, and we're going to fly that from Sydney.
Now, why exactly did the project to build the satellite not come to fruition? Is it too difficult, or is it just too expensive? You didn't have the money?
Well, it was a very ambitious program, and it requires a lot of money. Even one of those small satellites costs something like $15,000 to buy the plans, and would have cost perhaps another $100,000 to buy the parts, and perhaps another $100,000 to have it launched, such as on the Ariane rocket as a piggyback payload.
The Ariane's the European rocket.
Yes, that's right. Unfortunately, we haven't yet raised that sort of money, so in the meantime, we're looking at other projects, including the rocket project. And we're developing a number of other technologies which are useful for either rockets or satellites, such as imaging systems.
I was just about to ask you, what would the satellite have carried had you gone ahead with it?
Well, there's a number of useful things that little satellite could have done. Primarily, it would have been a means of implementing some research and education in space technologies. However, it could carry a quite useful imaging system, a small CCD camera we were hoping to put on it. And in fact, there's a very successful imaging system on board the University of Surrey's light satellite, and which is proving of great interest.
How big are they? We talk about light satellites and microsatellites. How big are they actually?
Well, the North American microsat is about the smallest, which has a full electronic systems on board, and they weigh about 10 kilograms, and they're about 220 millimeters cubed, so it's about the size of a hat box, I guess.
Well, Ian, how can you actually put a useful payload, something useful, into a space so small?
Well, Andrew, there's the new technology of microprocessors means that you can put a whole computer and control system on one printed circuit board. So that really enables you to pack things into a small space. And also, even if you're developing a large instrument for a big satellite, there are quite a few components of that instrument that you can benefit through proving their capabilities in a small satellite. So that's one application. And a second application is that there are quite a few radio communications experiments that are quite useful that can fit on such a small satellite. And in fact, one of those is an area that's just receiving study now, and that is sending out signals to an array of receivers on the ground, and which can produce an image of the ionosphere. That technique is called tomography, and people might be more familiar with computer-aided tomography, which is used to scan the brain. Well, using the same technique, you can reconstruct an image of the ionosphere.
Okay. What's the ionosphere, Ian?
Well, that's some layers in the upper atmosphere from about 100 kilometres up to several hundred kilometres, where the very rare air is ionised, and that has a dramatic effect on radio communications and magnetic storms. And it's of great value to be able to study the dynamics of those layers.
Is that what causes the aurora, the ionosphere?
Well, the radiation coming from the sun causes both the ionosphere and the auroras. Yes, they're very closely related.
Right. And you couldn't actually then get a working ionospheric sounder on the microsat, or could you?
I think that you could. This is again using the greater intelligence of modern computers. You don't need a very elaborate transmitter on the satellite, but you need a rather complex network on the ground in this case. There have been satellite-borne ionospheric sounders for some time, but that's not quite what we're building now. What we're building is a very carefully designed transmitter on the satellite that puts out a very steady signal, and on the ground you have quite an array of 3 or 5 or 7 receivers, and the complexities on the ground, and this will enable you to reconstruct an image of the ionosphere.
And why would we want to have a picture of the ionosphere? Why would we want that?
Well, the dynamics of the ionosphere are very important for all of our radio communications on Earth, and they're important also for defence reasons. For example, the over-the-horizon radar, which Australians probably know as Jindalee, is very dependent on the ionosphere for its operation.
So when we listen to shortwave radio, it's the ionosphere that's bringing us the signal, and it's the ionosphere which, when it's disturbed, is causing interference.
Yes, that's right. And we have a very incomplete picture of the ionosphere. So a satellite-borne ionospheric tomography experiment would be possibly a very valuable research tool.
The first satellites way back in the 1960s were described as about the size of a grapefruit. And then satellites got bigger and bigger and bigger. Why did they go away from these small satellites into big ones, and why is it now we're coming back? You've mentioned microprocessor, but don't you have problems with keeping it stable when it's so small?
Yes, certainly. In fact, the early satellites generally didn't have attitude control systems on the smaller satellites, so they were spin stabilized, and they were sort of left to the mercy of the elements.
But like a spinning top.
Yes, and its axis would slowly change as forces acted on it. And since then, there have been a number of other means of passive stabilization for small satellites, and the existing small satellite designs generally rely on the Earth's magnetic field to produce various spinning motions, which at least it's stable. The disadvantage of this is that any instruments you have on board that you may wish to face the Earth spend half their time facing the sky, and any radio antennas you have on board must radiate in all directions because the satellite can be any way up.
So you keep the satellite pointed much like a compass points north?
Well, the Earth, it actually tumbles end over end because the magnetic field has vertical component as well. The existing North American microsat designs are stabilized by the magnetic field, as I mentioned, but ASIRA, together with Hawker de Havilland, where I work, have been studying means of providing three-axis stabilization. That's a much more advanced technique, which to date has only been used on larger satellites, and this enables you to keep one end of the satellite pointing towards the ground. And the advantage of that is that then your antennas only need to radiate into a much smaller angle, and furthermore you can have a camera or other remote sensing instruments which spend their time pointing at Earth.
Not much use having a weather sensor or a environmental sensor pointing out in space, is it?
That's right. So we're going to use gravity gradient stabilization, which means a mass on the end of a boom, and that uses the gradient of the magnetic field to keep it pointed roughly vertical. But even that isn't stable enough. You need the microprocessor to carry out magnetic torquing against the Earth's magnetic field. And again, that's using the miniaturization made possible by microprocessors. And by combining these two techniques, we want to enhance the performance of these microsats so they can be three-axis stabilized and greatly improve their capabilities.
And does this have a flow-on into other satellites programs, or is it just a program in its own right? In other words, can the technologies that you're developing there be applied to other satellite programs in Australia and even perhaps overseas?
Yes, they certainly can, Andrew. In fact, at Hawker de Havilland, we're planning to develop a light satellite based on the design by the University of Surrey. Their light satellites at the moment are earth-pointing, but not three-axis stabilized. So the techniques that we hope to develop would be very useful there in providing three-axis stabilization. One of the difficulties here in relying on the Earth's magnetic field, that varies in quite a complicated way as you go around the orbit. And to use that to provide a torque on the satellite, you have to be very smart. You can't provide the torque at the instant just when you need it. You have to provide it only at a later time, so you really need a very smart computer to work out the best strategy to achieve that.
Well, thank you for joining us this evening on the Space Show, Ian.
You're welcome, Andrew.